This week, the BOAG World Show features Stuart Frisby from Booking.com and Vision Learning, a site that teaches us the power of a well-designed interface. Joining me, as always, is Marcus Lillington. Hello, Marcus.
Hello, Paul. How are you?
I'm very well. And today's show, is, as always, is brought to you by headscape.co.uk and our shiny new site.
And our shiny new site, is that our instead of a...
Oh, I'm supposed to come up with jargon, aren't I? I always forget the jargon.
Wait, forget it. We're having shiny new
site. Shiny new site.
you nearly said shite then.
Shite. It's a shite site. Oh, I'd get in trouble with Ed and Dan if they only heard me say that. Luckily, they don't listen to the podcast, so that's not a problem.
Yes, it is very shiny and very lovely.
It is. I like it. And you know what's really exciting? The most exciting bit of all is I'm like a grown-up now. I started using version control to edit the site.
Yes.
I know everyone else has been doing that since like 2006, but I hate version control systems. They never work for me. But this time I seem to have cracked it. I set it all up myself and it worked. I'm a grown-up.
That's good. Dan will be much happier than he was earlier.
Was he stroppy that I'd edited the live site over the weekend?
Might have been.
I knew he would be. But I did it anyway.
Yes.
Wow! See, he wasn't there at my beck and call. Some of us work through our weekends, you know.
Well, you could have just phoned him up. He would have really appreciated
that.
He
would have appreciated that just as much as me editing the live site, wouldn't he?
Probably more so, actually.
I think so, yeah. So anyway, so that's really fun. I don't know whether you're as pleased as I am, but I am really chuffed with the way it's come out.
We finally have the site that I wanted many years ago.
It's beautiful. It's a real thing of beauty. And what I've got, which I've always wanted, is that combination of BOAG World and Headscape together.
Yeah.
You know, I think they sit so well together. And the navigation idea that I came up with, to be honest, was genius, obviously.
Did you really come up with
it? I did, actually. That is the only contribution I really made to this site, was the main navigation. But it wasn't as genius as Ed's very funky approach to case studies.
Yes, superb.
Seriously.
But Dan ended up building most of that.
Yeah, It was Ed's idea, mm-hmm. But obviously it was Dan that made it happen. Yes. So you need to check it out because it is very cool. I'll put a link in the show notes to it. Because essentially what they've done, which is really clever, well, I'm not talking to you now, Marcus, obviously, because you know this. I'm talking mm-hmm. to the BOAG World listener, which is that instead of showing a static comp of the website, what they've done instead is put it in an iframe, which makes a lot of sense. But then what they've done is they've used CSS transforms in order to scale that down so that it, you know, it actually fits within the page. And then, just to make it even cooler, they've changed the size of the iframe to show the site on different devices. So there's a desktop version, there's a tablet version, a tablet landscape, and a mobile and a mobile landscape version. And you can click through them and the site adapts. You know, because obviously it's a responsive site that we've been building, and you can see it in all different forms. It's really clever, and it's just such a simple idea that I think it's brilliant.
There are some, I mean, that's the viewer on the case studies page is a really good example of why I like the site so much. We tried to sort of only include things that are relevant. And we, during the build of the site, Ed had put a kind of background image behind the viewer of just looking out of our windows. And I really liked it. I thought the kind of like knockback black and white image added to the view of each of the different case studies. I don't know why, but I really liked it. Yeah. And then he said, oh, I only bunged that in for just sort of, you know, just to see what it would look like. And I didn't take it out. And then when he took it out, I was kind of like, oh, it looks really plain. But what he's then ended up doing is having a view basically of his desk. There's Lee, and then there's Andy over in the background, and it's basically Ed looking through. If you're looking at the different designs through Ed's eyes,
yeah, so sitting at Ed's desk,
it becomes relevant. There's some really nice touches about the design of the site, and that's one of them.
Do you know, I hadn't even realised that's what it was.
Yeah,
that makes perfect sense. I like that.
Good, isn't it?
It is good. So I'm sorry, dear listener. We're a bit gushy and overexcited about it at the moment. It'll pass. We'll get used to it.
Well, this I wanted this site that goes back as far as when we worked with John Hicks on our
branding.
On our branding, which was what? I don't know. 6, 7, 8 years ago.
When you say you wanted this site, what do you mean by that?
He came up with many, many different mood boards,
right,
if you remember. And one of them was basically this design. And I was like, I like that one, I like that one at the time. And we made the right choice as to the mood board styling that we went for. But this was the style that I've always really liked.
Okay. Just what elements of the style? Just the black and white?
Black and white, focus on typography, focus on white space, all that kind of thing.
Yeah. Which is just very appropriate now.
Yes.
The only big thing I need fixing is our search, because our search is crap.
Yes.
But we might have come up with a solution to that. There is work in progress. Getting a decent search in WordPress is crap. All of them. I think we need to abandon, WordPress plugins and those kinds of things, and go for something that spiders the site, like Google would spider it instead. I think that's going to probably work out better in the long run. But anyway, that's beside the point. Hey, I've been thinking about our next season.
Okay.
Because we've only got one episode of this season left.
Is that it?
Yeah. Because then I'm going on holiday. Yay! Da, 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 da. So, yeah, we're recording one next Tuesday.
Right.
And then that's done. So that'll come out on the week of the 16th of June. So it'll come out on the 20th of June. And then that's it. So I've had to been thinking about the next season. I've come up with a great idea. You're going to love this.
No,
you are.
I'm not, am I?
You are. I think some people would. I can tell you who will disapprove of this. Andy Budd and Jeremy Keith will disapprove of this.
Oh, no.
Well, it's season 10 we're about to go into, right?
Right. Oh, it's the 10 best this, isn't it?
Yeah!
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
I think that would be brilliant. So each episode we have the 10 best of something. Right? Or 10 tips for, or we're going to do a list season.
Yeah, I've got no problem with that at all.
I think it'd be great.
Absolutely fine, yes.
I think it'd be a lot of fun. Now, Jeremy and Andy have been slightly opinionated in the past about list posts, because they are lazy. List posts are lazy. But people like them, because you can take them in very quickly. And it'd be really good as well. The reason I'm looking forward to doing this for the show is for the show notes, because essentially we can allow people to skip. So if they're only interested in one point, they can just scan the list of different things that we're covering and then skip to the right part in the show, which would be really good. Of course, it will mean that you'll have to mark all of the different audio points for all 10 points.
Maybe.
So your level of commitment to our listener is astounding.
Might do.
In this week's show, we seem to have lost 9 of our listeners. I keep referring to the listener. So we did have 10, and now we're down to 1. It must have been a bad week. They obviously don't like the new site or something.
How can you not like the new site? Some people, well, one person doesn't like the video-y, gif-y thing.
No, I don't like that.
Yeah, but you don't count.
No, but my opinion counts more than anyone else's.
No, it doesn't.
Has Lee persuaded you to keep it?
It's just sort of stayed. We've only had... I'm not sure.
Right. Dear listener, go along to headscape.co.uk and you'll find an animated Giphy thing behind the text. You have to then write to marcus@boagworld.com with just one word, cool or not cool.
That's three words. Oh, well, the second one is two words.
You pedantic. You can have
cool or not.
Cool or not. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the reason behind it, because what I was saying earlier about having things that are relevant, the idea was to have... We wanted to have something graphical on the homepage because it felt a little bit too stark without anything
at the top of the
homepage. And it was like, well, what can we have? And a picture of all of us was what we kind of felt was the... That was the only thing that could work. And then we started messing around with, well, maybe we could have a bit of video. And we messed around with that. And it was like, yeah, okay. But then it was too big. And we've ended up with what we've ended up. And I don't know if it's a Marmite thing. Some people seem to love it and some people seem to hate it.
Only Lee loves it.
Well, yeah, that's why I say I don't know if it is, because I sort of am all right with it. But I think if a lot of people came in and said, oh, no, that's really annoying, or that doesn't help in any way, I would be quite happy to change it. So I guess I'm on the fence.
I think we were right with the video. I think what we did wrong is we should have had a still image that loads.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the video is, you know, everything else on the page loads, when the video loads in the background, it starts playing.
Well, there you go. We'll just do that then.
Well, that's what I said. But nobody listened to me. As is always the case. You make it happen, Marcus. They listen to you.
All right. Yeah, they do sometimes. Once in a while.
I'm scared of Dan and Ed, you see, so I don't like making suggestions. They just tell me off.
Yeah, I have to kind of use my full sales mode to make things happen.
Well, all you need to do to make things happen is push your glasses to the end of your nose.
Yes.
And then you look like you're telling everybody off and you're the authoritative old man.
Headmaster.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's good. So you like my idea for season 10. That's good. I probably should have discussed it with you before we started the podcast rather than live on air.
No, we never do that.
No, we don't. This is the only time we talk to one another.
At the moment. Mind you, you're going away with Chris for a few days. I'm quite envious.
Yeah.
You're going to get to have a chat.
It will be nice. Although I have so much to do. So many places to go. My diary is just ridiculous. And then Chris this morning has just crowbarred another trip up to Glasgow in.
Has he? When's that then?
Yeah, 25th of June, I think. Why are we discussing this on the podcast? This is ridiculous. Let's move on.
Because it's the only time we get to talk to each other.
I know. Let's move on to the interview instead, shall we?
Yeah.
All right.
Good interview today.
It's a brilliant one. I'm really looking forward to it. So here it is. It's a surprise one because I'm introduced it. Normally I introduce them. Mm. But this week you'll just have to find out. The featured project's good as well, but I'm not going to tell you about that either. So here we go. So joining me today is Stuart Frisbee. How are you, Stuart?
I'm very good, Paul. How are you?
I'm very well. It's great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for giving up your time.
Pleasure.
So, Stuart, as I understand it, you work for Booking.com, which I'm sure the vast majority of people that are listening to the show have already heard of. But for those that haven't, can you give us a quick rundown of what the organisation does, what it and then also what your role is?
Sure, yeah, it's a familiar spiel for me. I'm telling my relatives all the time what it is I actually do for a living, so it's pretty well prepared. So Booking.com, we're based in Amsterdam. We're the world's leading provider of accommodation online, so we're a booking engine for hotels and various other things which aren't hotels: igloos, apartments, tents, Bedouin tents, yurts, all that kind of stuff. My role specifically, I'm the person responsible basically for growing our design team and taking a broad perspective on our platform. From a design perspective, my title is nominally principal designer.
Okay.
I've been with the company for 3 years, based in our headquarters in central Amsterdam. Previous to that, I was doing agency work in New Zealand and before that, living in Liverpool.
Okay. So you sound like you're from the UK originally.
I am. I'm from Coventry, which was lovely before the war, but lots of reasons for me to go and explore, which is why I've tried very hard to go and see a bit of the world since leaving there about 10 years ago.
Yeah, no, that sounds amazing. Sounds like you've had quite a journey.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about what kind of things you're doing on a day-to-day basis as principal designer. What will you be doing today, for example?
Okay, yeah, that's a good question. So maybe it helps a little bit to just explain the environment. Our front-end team, the team of people responsible for looking after the website and our array of mobile products, is about 200 people. Amongst them, there's maybe 40 or 50 designers. And so my role predominantly is taking a broad perspective on the product, being a conduit for critique and feedback on design stuff that's going on, taking a kind of more medium or long-term perspective on the platform from a design point of view. I get involved in hiring and recruitment, so I talk to lots of people about the opportunities that we've got on offer here. Today I'll be talking to a candidate for a design position who's flying in from China. That's a pretty typical day for me.
Okay. So, I mean, that's quite a big design team, isn't it, for the platform, which explains the incredible attention to detail on your site. I mean, you guys are well known for those little e-commerce enhancements that kind of nudge people into booking. You've got some great little persuaders that I absolutely love on the site.
Yeah, so the reason our design team can be so large is the approach we take to product development is one of testing stuff very thoroughly. So at any one time, live on the platform, we have hundreds of things which we're testing. And that means that there's lots of opportunities for designers to work independently, but also in collaboration with each other on independent features or design improvements. And as you point out, the kind of persuasive elements of e-commerce is something that we're a leader in. We're probably a few years ahead of most of the e-commerce industry.
Yeah.
The advantage of our market, of course, is that hotels are quite an expensive thing to buy, and so we enjoy quite large margins, which allows us to play around with quite a lot of stuff from a design perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, talk about, you've just talked about one of the benefits there, but tell us some of the challenges you face of working on a website like booking.com.
Sure. So it's a very complex product. It's been around for a long time. I think the site first launched in 1996.
Wow.
So it's a bit of a dinosaur in internet terms. And with that comes all of the complexities of an old product. So with a code base which is hairy at times, we're dealing with a user base which is very diverse as well. So the site's in 41 languages. We support an enormous array of browsers and devices. So from a designer's perspective, that can be really challenging. If you take one tiny example of changing the copy on a button on the website, you have languages like Greek and Russian, which can be very verbose, and languages like Chinese and Japanese, which are very concise. And so for a designer working in that kind of environment, there's so many variables at play that you have to kind of design in a much broader sense, I think, and design with a lot more flexibility than I was previously able to enjoy when I was working on websites which were just in English, which seems like a very simple challenge in retrospect, but at the time I didn't think it was that.
I know, it's amazing. I used to, back in the day, used to work for IBM. In their EMEA division, which is, mm-hmm. Middle East, Africa, Asia, it's huge, basically everywhere except America. And, that's a ridiculous number of languages. And of course, you have to deal with things like websites that read from right to left rather than left to right and all kinds of peculiarities that not to mention then, of course, the cultural elements in terms of imagery and stuff like that.
Indeed, yeah. So I think the language stuff is kind of one variable that we deal with, but then indeed kind of trying to understand the cultural aspects of those countries which make them different and trying to address those markets individually is something that we work a lot on. So we have teams dedicated to looking at our platform from an Asian perspective, from a kind of localization perspective in all of our major markets. And it sadly is not as simple as changing the language. Our right-to-left website is basically a complete flip of the entire website.
Wow, that sounds incredible. Now, one of the things that I wanted to talk to you guys about is company culture. Because in the book that I've just been just released, I talk a lot about company culture and how that is so vital in order to make a website successful. And one of your colleagues was at a conference when I was talking about this kind of stuff, and he came bounding up to me afterwards and says, you must talk to Stuart that the culture that we have at booking.com does all the things that you've been talking about. You know, we really have embraced that way of thinking. So my curiosity has been piqued, and I kind of want to know what you think it is about booking.com that is culturally so friendly.
Okay. So the culture is pretty interesting. So we're a Dutch company that in the early 2000s was bought by an American company, Priceline.com. So we're part of a group of companies that encompasses Kayak and Rentalcars.com and a few others. But we've maintained a pretty Dutch culture, which is one of directness and also kind of quite an outward-looking one. So when I was talking about languages, that's something that as a Dutch company, we're always very much looking outside of our own borders. I think the really interesting things culturally for us is that we started off as a very small company and became a very big company quite quickly. Mm. But what we've tried to do and what we continue to try to do is to keep some of that startup ethos of moving quickly and breaking things, to use the Facebook terminology.
Yeah.
So we're massive, as I mentioned before. There are maybe 200 of us committing code to the front end on any one day. But we try and remain as agile and as lightweight as possible. So all of those 200 people roll out to the entire website, which gives us somewhat of an impression of the fact that we hold on to some of those small company stuff things.
I mean, sorry to interrupt you, but how do you practically do that? I mean, that just the idea of 200 people all committing to a website at the same time, how does that not turn into hell?
Some people would suggest that it is on the verge of that sometimes. Okay. It gets very complicated. But we have systems in place which allow us to roll forward and then roll back very quickly. So if we deploy the website and something's wrong, we're very quickly able to revert to the previous working version. But also the way that we kind of do product development is that teams are kind of responsible for their area of the platform. And when other people are working there's some coordination involved. But the essence of it is that we're able to move quickly in both directions, and it works out pretty well. I think if you look at our competitive landscape, some of our competitors, rather than taking that approach, will take their website down for one day per quarter to roll out a new set of features or changes.
Yeah.
We think that doing it our way comes with some short-term costs, so we may break the website occasionally, but the accumulation of all of those small breakages is much smaller than the cost of taking the website down for a day, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. So what about kind of management structure and company organization? How are you guys, are you fairly traditional? Do you have departments and, you know, do you have a hierarchical management structure, etc.?
We do, but I think that the structure on paper seems far more hierarchical than it is in practice. So if you take the position of a designer within a team, they're working in a team of 4 or 5 people alongside some technical specialists and a product owner. That product owner reports to a director who reports to the CEO. So it's a very flat structure in that sense.
Right.
If you look across departments, that structure is multiplied out. So we're very much involved in the customer-facing side, but there's a huge organization within the business that's focused on the supply side, so maintaining relationships with hotels.
Yeah.
Or a big customer service department. So that structure changes a little bit depending on the department. In IT, as we still call it, because we're from the 90s, we try very hard to only introduce new layers in the structure when it's absolutely necessary. And I think I've been here for 3 years. In that time, we've added one extra layer in terms of the hierarchy. So it's not something that we do lightly. And the more people we have who aren't touching the product on a daily basis, the kind of less contributing we believe them to be. So we like people who are hands-on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I noticed there you talked about how your small micro teams are made up of people of different disciplines. So it's not like, you know, the coders are in one room and the designers are in the other kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So a good example, a single team would have a designer, someone who's writing CSS and HTML for production and working on mockups and wireframes and getting involved in user research. Mm-hmm. A front-end developer who's tying it all together with JavaScript and thinking about some of the more complex interactions. There's a back-end developer who's providing data structures from our databases and all various other parts of business logic. And then a product owner who's responsible for taking all of the ideas that come into the team and putting them into a prioritized order that really matches their potential business impact.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so you spent, what, 3 years at this company, and before that, it sounds like you worked in, you know, very different kind of environments, agency yeah. type environments. So making that transition, what's the most valuable lesson that you've kind of learned from working on booking.com?
Sure. Yeah, this one's really easy. It's one that I talk about a lot. So I used to go about being a designer with this assumption that being a designer was knowing how to do things, was knowing how to design, was knowing how to solve problems. And actually, I think what I've come to learn in my 3 years at Booking.com is that being a designer is about being able to take a broad perspective on something and to come up with an idea, but not be married to that idea being successful. The way that we roll out features and changes to the site is that we test them. And what we find is that we're all mostly wrong.
Yeah.
So I think there's a sense in the broader design community, I think, that the designer is the expert. The way that we see it within the company is that the designer is the person who facilitates testing new features, but isn't necessarily correct.
Yeah.
So that to me is the biggest change. I think it's something that takes a lot of getting used to. And I think people joining the company have a bit of a tough onboarding going from that idea of being an expert to not actually knowing what works more than anybody else does.
I think, yeah, it's a really good point. I also think it's a thing that comes a little bit with age as well. The older I get, the less sure I am about anything, you know, which seems a bit back to front, really, isn't it? Because, you know, I've got more experience than I've ever had in my whole life. And that experience tells me that I know less than I think I do. You know, it's weird.
And I think you also start out with this, at least I as a designer started out with this. Assumption that there are things which are just globally true. So if I did something for one client, it was right for the next client. And even now on booking.com, if I, you know, I can do something in one context and it works perfectly and users respond really well to it, but changing the context even slightly generally results in that feature not working.
Oh, I can so associate with that feeling, because so often you get clients, especially e-commerce clients, seem to be the worst. They come along and they say, I want it to be like Amazon. Well, just because it worked for Amazon doesn't mean it will work for you. I mean, the big one, of course, that I can sense is coming over the hill is that, well, Google have removed their underlines on their links, you know, on their website. So now everybody has to remove their underlines, you know, whether or not you are Google.
Yeah.
So this, you know, that I think is a very, very good lesson that we need to learn, that, you know, every situation is unique, even within an existing website, you know, a single
exactly.
website. So it sounds like with the team that you've got, you probably don't, but do you ever use external contractors?
Rarely. It's an exception rather than a rule.
Okay.
And kind of for the reasons I discussed before, the complexities of the product and the uniqueness of the way that we work, it's very difficult, I think, for a contractor to kind of come in and hit the ground running. But we don't have hard rules against it. If we need people to help us out on specific things, we'll bring people in. So we occasionally hire external illustrators to help us on visual stuff. We augment some of our teams with specific skills to try and help us get through periods where we're perhaps not as flush on having the right people as we would like to be. But yeah, I think it's quite difficult for a contractor.
Well, let's flip it around, because this is a question that I tend to ask a lot about what people look for in an external contractor. But instead, I'm going to ask you, so what is it you look for? You're doing an interview later today. So what mm-hmm. is it you're going to be looking for in the people that you interview?
Sure. So there are kind of three predominant or three main kind of aspects that we look at in the interview process. There's craftsmanship. So the core technical skills, the ability to present reasoned design arguments, ability to stand up in front of your colleagues and explain your approach to something, being able to fix bugs in IE7, that kind of stuff is one set, but that's not really enough. So in addition to that, we have 67 nationalities within the team. So being able to communicate effectively is really important. So communication is the second aspect that we look at really strongly. Mm-hmm. And then the third one is commercial aptitude. So designers here are given basically free rein to decide what it is they want to do with our product. And so in order to make sure that we're not, you know, changing the font family to Comic Sans on a whim, we like to bring in people who are able to think in a commercial mindset. So they're not just thinking about solving a design problem, but they're thinking about that problem in the context of the broader business in which we operate. So commercial aptitude, communication, craftsmanship are the three things.
That works really well. I particularly like your attention to communication there, and communication in its broadest sense, because like you say, when you've got so many different nationalities, it's not just, you know, what language do you speak? It's the cultural differences, I'm guessing, between all those different nationalities that could be a huge issue if you don't pick the right kind of people.
Very much so, and so I'm a native English speaker, and I like to think of myself as being pretty good at English. But what I noticed when joining the company and the company having quite a Dutch culture where it's very direct is that my inclination as an Englishman is to be very indirect.
Yeah.
And almost saying the opposite of what you mean in a lot of circumstances. And so even as a native English speaker, there's quite a lot of adaptation that you have to go through on the communication side in order to make sure that you're not losing stuff in translation every time you're explaining something to someone else.
Absolutely. So one last question, and I think this is going to possibly be an impossible question, because of the way you're structured. But what's your big focus as an organisation at the moment? What is it that you're spending a lot of time and resources about and thinking about?
Good question, and I won't give too much detail because I'll probably end up in blue collar prison if I do that. But I'll speculate a little bit about the industry and in the broader sense, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think the first part is if you take a look at the likes of Airbnb, Lodgify.com would be another great example. There's this move towards what I call the consumerization of selling accommodation. Mm-hmm. I think historically, if you've compared the tools which are available to consumers and the tools available to business, there's been a massive gap in terms of the quality of user experience. I think Airbnb are really challenging that. And for the established likes of Booking.com and Expedia and all of the other kind of big guys in the industry, I think it poses a really interesting challenge in terms of how we can take what we've done for consumers and do it for people who provide accommodation. I think that's something that we'll see a lot of progress on in the next 12 months.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because that's a reoccurring thing that the web seems to be doing. You know, that it seems to hit sector after sector, and that sector suddenly the gatekeepers, the people that used to control the sector, are now being challenged in terms of the means of production and the means of promotion. So for example, you know, where once you would have to go to a bank manager to you know, get a loan, now you can use Kickstarter. You know, where once in order to be a professional musician you'd have to be signed to a record label, now you can post stuff directly to iTunes yourself. So it's this kind of, like you say, commercialization where anybody has got the means of production, and the power is shifting in a sense.
Definitely, and it's a challenge that we've kind of got our eyes very open to. And in our position as kind of a market leader, it's very easy to become complacent to some of these things. And so the challenge for us is to not rest on our laurels and to really try and keep up and continue kind of setting the standards across our industry.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for your time, Stuart. I think there's some really good stuff. And it's really interesting to see. Booking.com are a funny company compared to a lot of the ones that we've interviewed, because they're a kind of, there's the internet cool trendy startup gang, and then there's the kind of post pre-internet gang, and yep. You're kind of in the middle there, aren't you, where you're an early, you know, an early figure on the technology scene, you know, back in 96 or whatever it was. So you've kind of got some of the elements of a traditional company, but a lot of the still thinking and approaches of internet digital companies. And it's quite interesting to see where digital companies go over a long period of time like this. So really useful interview. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Pleasure to talk to you, Paul.
There is something about me that would love to work on a big site like Booking.com.
Really?
Yeah.
So I found because I was listening to listening along. Obviously, I wasn't part of this particular one, so I was listening along to it. And what I found myself doing is going to the Booking.com site and then start looking up hotels and thinking about going on holiday. So if I work there, all I'd be going is, "Oh, that's a good deal."
I know, but that's why it's such a good... Yeah, but if you work there, you'd realise how much they're manipulating you. Because they are... Seriously, these guys are considered one of the best examples of e-commerce manipulation. It's they've got tons of...
Brainwashing.
Seriously, they're brainwashing you. They've got, you know, if you... There's whole articles been written about just their hotel's details page. You know,
well, I have seriously been having a conversation with Caroline about going to Rome.
See?
In the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's the trouble. They're so good. And, you know, they have these different scores. So it rates 8.2 out of 10, and it's rated very good. And it's based on, you know, 1,131 people think that this website, this particular hotel is very good. Oh, I must go there.
So it must be really good.
It must be really good.
I'm exactly the same. It's very good. 8.2 out of 10. Score from 1,020 reviews. Well, that's it.
Yes.
The pictures look really nice as well.
Exactly. And the pictures are really... And then they do this other thing where then it says, when you look at the different suites, he said, it says things like only two left, but it doesn't stop there. Sometimes I think I'm going from memory, but I think it says things like expected to sell out in the next 2 hours, just to really put the pressure on.
Well, and they've got ones, yeah, last chance, we have one room left, but also we've just sold the last space in this one.
Like, if only I'd made a more impulsive decision there.
Yeah, I want that one. I'll change the date and then I can have it.
Yeah. It's very, very clever. I'm very, very impressed by the site. And, you know, I often look through it and I'm quite heavily influenced by it. But as, you know, as Stuart said, context is everything. And just because it works, you know, what works for them won't necessarily work for other people. In fact, what works on one part of their site won't necessarily work on another.
Mm.
And I love that whole thing he got talking about, Denis, of, you know, as a designer, all you're doing is forming hypotheses. Yeah. And then testing the crap out of them. And you can tell that this site has been tested to it within an inch of its life, can't you? Mm.
Yeah. And I guess that's the thing. Yeah. I think a lot of designers would struggle to work there because he was basically saying you have to kind of throw it all. You have to throw. Sorry, I'm thinking out loud as ever. But I think it's right that designers are taught that, you know, that they are an expert. They're a professional, but they're hired to provide a skill, which you kind of, if you work for these guys, you have to kind of throw it out the window, and it's all based on testing.
Yeah.
It's data, you know, we're designing with data, full stop.
Yeah. I don't think that's entirely fair, because there is still a skill in forming the idea that you're going to test.
I suppose, yeah, you've got to come up with something to be tested.
Yeah, and I think that's where the real designer skill comes in, is working out the best way, you know, what are the different permutations, what are the different ways that we could go about doing this. So no, I still think it's a highly skilled job, but it's just there is a lot of pressure, because, you know, you can't make assumptions. You have to prove everything.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting.
I've just noticed on the hotel listing here that one of these rooms has got soundproofing.
Ooh.
Okay. It's sort of dodgy, isn't it? Oh, yes, we need a hotel with soundproofing.
No, so you get a good night's sleep.
Really?
You've got a dirty mind.
Yeah.
Hey, another line that I liked out of Stuart and what Stuart said in his interview is that thing about if people aren't hands-on with the product, they're seen as contributing less.
Yeah.
So screw you, Mr. Accounting Department.
Yes, you don't count.
I don't know. I think that might have been Stuart's particular bias, but I might be wrong. I'm sure if I spoke to someone from accounts, they wouldn't agree. Or HR.
Yes, the whole thing would fall apart if it wasn't for us. That's what they'd say.
Yeah, of course it would. That's what we all say, isn't it? Hey, so great interview. Really enjoyed that. We were really lucky to get Stuart on the show, and I really enjoyed hearing from him. But shall we now move on and look at our featured project? So, our featured project for the week is visionlearning.com by Craig Kaufman. Actually, I think he did it in association with somebody else, but I can't remember their names. They're not important. Craig wrote in, so it's Craig we love.
Yeah. Thanks, Craig.
We love you, Craig. So, yes, go and check out, if you've got a browser handy, go and check out visionlearning.com.
I'm doing it.
So, the reason I picked this one, if I'm honest, is because it was a science site that provides, essentially what they provide is free digital resources for teaching and learning science. Which, as somebody that has a son who is obsessed with science and who is homeschooled, this was perfect for me.
Yep.
So I actually got my wife and my child in to assess this site, Craig. Just so you know, we've done real usability testing on this site with real potential users. And I'm glad to tell you, Craig, that it passed with flying colours. They were both very impressed. So there you go.
Cool.
So should we talk about the... So let's talk about the site. So basically, it's got loads of free digital resources for teaching and learning science. What I love really about this site is it's got this very clear, clean, easy-to-use interface. Doesn't try and be too clever, but it's still really attractively designed and well put together. And it's got a really simple structure to it. So many, especially because we do loads of work with universities, and they like to make things complicated to universities. Well, this site has got modules that are organized into subject areas. As simple as that. So if you're interested in physics, as my son is, you click into physics, then there are a whole load of modules on different elements of physics, and you click on one of those modules, and in you go, and you get all these useful, cool information.
I'm sorry, I'm giggling away, because I'm clicking around the site, and at the bottom of the page, there's an ad from booking.com for hotels in Rome.
Oh, that's because you just went to booking.com, didn't you? Yeah. You see,
I'll get a phone call in a minute.
Yeah, they know, they're following you, Marcus. So yes, it's really nice, clean design, very, very readable, because obviously you're doing a lot of reading on the site, so the typography is really great. But one of the things that particularly jumped out at me was the glossary of terms. So if you go into one of the modules, Marcus, doesn't matter which one.
I'm going to chemistry.
Are you? That's nice.
I like chemistry.
So that's the subject area, and then click into one of the modules from within chemistry.
The periodic table of elements, which is such an amazing thing.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm here.
You see there's lots of words that are underlined green.
Yes.
Right, so roll over one of them.
There's lots of green words, not underlined. Oh, glossary term, Russian inventor and chemist born in Tobolsk, Siberia.
So it's got little explanations of all these different terminologies that just kind of pop up as little tooltips.
Very good.
Which is really good, and you think about all those sites.
How does that work on an iPad?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Perhaps it doesn't. Yeah, no, it'll just be a click
it'll
event.
Be a double click, you click it and then, yeah.
Yeah, it'll come up and then click on the background and it'll go away. Well, that's how I would do it. I can't be bothered to actually check whether he's done that.
Well, I'd have to walk out of the room. Well, and drive home. And
which would be a little extreme, just to test that.
Yes, we can carry on the interview, the podcast then.
Yes. So there may be a small break at this point. We'll keep recording. So, interestingly,
I like
that is an idea I wrote about in 2010. And I'll put a link in the show notes of how to deal with glossaries. And that's exactly the idea that I suggested.
I remember you saying that. I like the language and the display font, default and open dyslexic. That's blooming good.
Oh, where'd you see that?
Big red button at top right.
Oh, and it's got something for... Oh, that's nice. So you can change it so it's... Hey, it uses that special dyslexic font. That's really cool. That's just... Oh, I love it. Craig, you rock. Although it's really annoying if you're not dyslexic. So I'm going to turn it back to the default. So there we go. That's really cool. In case people don't know about the dyslexic font, do go and check it out on that website. So essentially, dyslexic font is designed... I think it's designed so the bottom of each letter is heavier. That's what it looks like, doesn't it, as well?
Yeah.
Which apparently means it doesn't jump around visually so much for dyslexic people and makes it easier to read, which is really cool. It's an open dyslexic font, if you want to Google that and find out more about it. So, yeah, what else do I like about this site? So I love the glossary terms. I also like, the other thing I like about it, is as you go through some of the modules, not all of them, partway through it asks you a simple question. right, based on what you just read, in order to see whether you've taken in that idea or not. And then also, with each module, there's also a quiz alongside it. So once you've... I've got stuck on open dyslexic now.
Yeah.
Go back. It's not remembering my cookie settings. Dull. So, yeah, and then you go to the quiz, and you can go through and you can see if you've learned everything properly, which is really cool. I like that. And it's got an amazing set of resources with each module. So there's all kinds of additional resources, information, and goes off to Wikipedia articles and all that kind of stuff, which is really cool as well. And what they've done here, so because you think they've put so much work into it, you know, where's the return, so to speak? But the return is that off the back of it, they're giving away this content for free, and then they're upselling books and courses and things like that off of the back of it, which is brilliant. And it's a really responsive site, which is great. And my only criticism of it is that some of their kind of videos that they've got are just buried under links, and I think it'd be much better to embed them in the page. Because the first thing my son saw when he looked at it is, well, there aren't any videos. And there actually are videos, but they pop up as like, when you click on them, kind of as an overlay. So, but let's bring it back to what we can learn for, you know, you as designing whatever site you are. What can we learn from this particular site? Number one is that a clean interface helps comprehension of the material that you're presenting. It's really this kind of cleanness of the way it's done, the way the typography is laid out, and all the rest of it makes it much easier to take in the information they're presenting. And actually, it's very misleading. When you first arrive on this site, your initial reaction is, oh, there isn't much here. But actually, there's stack loads of content. It's just it's so well presented that it doesn't feel overwhelming. And that's a really good sign. So it shows the value of design in aiding comprehension and taking stuff in. So that was one thing I liked about it. The other lesson I think we can learn is that this idea of using free content to sell products and services, which is essentially exactly what Boagmore and Tentscape does.
Mm.
You know, we give away all this material, this blog, this podcast, and all the written material, and we then that encourages people to, in our case, to hire us to do other stuff. You know, web design and consultancy and that kind of thing. So in their case, they're giving away all of this free material in order to sell their courses and sell their books, etc.
I've just taken a test in atomic theory and got 8 out of 12.
That's pretty good.
Without reading any of the stuff. See, I'm just clever, Paul.
I think it's designed for kids, to be fair. But whatever works for you, Marcus.
Oh, no, I feel great now.
You go with that. You go with that feeling. The other thing that lesson I think we can learn from this one is that... interaction helps to reinforce retention. In other words, in what they've done, because that sounded very fancy, didn't it? Mm-hmm. Did you like that? Interaction reinforces retention.
I just thought you read that out of a book somewhere.
No, I made it up out of my own head. So basically what I'm getting at there is that if you interact with something in some way, it helps you to remember it. So in their case... that's why they have these little quizzes and stuff like that, because if you do the quiz, that helps you remember the fact, okay? Because it forces you to interact and to recall the information, which will help you retain it over the longer term. Now, that same principle can be applied to any site. You know, if, for example, you encourage people to comment on one of your blog posts, then they're more, and they do that, then they're more likely to remember that blog post over a longer period of time. And that can be used as well to, you know, as a way of getting you to remember a brand or anything. If you start interacting with a brand, you're more likely to remember the brand.
Yeah.
And then the final lesson I think we can learn is the importance of explaining unfamiliar terms. I'm fed up with sites that use industry jargon or that kind of stuff because, you know, oh, well, everybody knows it. Well, I'm sorry, not everybody does know it. For a start, some people coming to your site might not speak English as their first language. Other people might have a cognitive disability like dyslexia, which means that they, you know, they might struggle to understand some terminology, or it might be that they're just new to your sector and so don't understand some of the terminology. So you need to do, you know, really ideally you want to remove that complicated terminology. But if you can't do that, you need to be doing things like the glossary of terms that these guys have done. Mm. So I, you know, good on them for putting that level of attention to detail. And I think really that's it for me. That sums up this site, attention to detail. It kind of, it's in everything that they've done, and I think it really shines as a result.
I think so too. It's very good.
It even gets Marcus's seal of approval.
Yes.
So that's good. So there we go. Check out visionlearning.com, and good job, Craig and team. That was a brilliant site, and you should be very proud. Marcus.
Yes.
Do we have to do a job?
A job?
A joke. God.
Oh, God, I don't want to have to do a job, do I?
Well, yeah, to be honest, your jokes feel like work to me.
Well, this week, Paul, I need you to help me out.
Oh, God, this is going to end well.
Right.
Yes.
Basically, this joke involves whales, not the country, the animal. And I need you to do a whale noise at a particular point in the joke.
Woo!
No, not yet.
Is that a good enough whale noise? I was checking it for a
suitability.
It's
perfect. Let's do the joke.
Okay.
Right, so there are two whales in a bar having a few drinks. One turns to the other and says,
"Woo!"
And his friend responds, "Steve, you're drunk."
I don't understand.
Well,
can you explain the joke to me?
If you and I were having a drink in a bar, all right?
Because I went,
"Woo!" I would turn around and say, "Paul, you're drunk."
Yeah, but they were whales.
Yeah, but they were in a bar. Yeah.
Well, that in itself is. No, I don't get that one.
I thought it was quite good.
No. No, that's a complete failure.
Okay.
I'm embarrassed for you, really, Marcus, over that.
No, there are people falling around laughing. And they're embarrassed for you feeling embarrassed.
The fact that you dragged me into that embarrassment of a joke and made me make stupid whale noises for that. In fact, to be honest, my whale noise was the best part of that joke.
In your mind.
Always in my mind. Everything is in my mind.
All right, let's move on quickly.
I think we're done.
Yeah, we're done.
I think we're just going to leave it hanging on that joke, to be honest.
Which is fine. I can live with that.
All right, so we're back next week for the last episode of Season 9. But start thinking about what top 10 lists we should be doing for Season 10, because I would love to hear your suggestions. You can send them to paul@boagworld.com. And don't forget to send Marcus an email at marcus@boagworld.com saying whether the video on the Headscape homepage is cool or not cool. Don't they do that on Top Gear?
They used to, don't anymore. The cool wall.
The cool wall.
Yes.
Okay. All right, well, that's it. Thank you very much for listening, and talk to you again next week.
Bye.